Is geography destiny? Does where you were born down to the very postcode determine everything or almost everything? In Bradford, an exciting, arguably revolutionary study is taking place that may well answer this question. The Born in Bradford study is tracking the health and well-being of over 13,500 children and their parents born at Bradford Royal Infirmary between 2007 and 2011. The health of these children is being followed from pregnancy through childhood and into adult life, and many of the first cohort will be celebrating their 18th birthday next year. So what does the data tell us so far? Well, already the study has prompted the creation of Bradford Clean Air Zone, a scheme to reduce pollution levels from vehicles and investment in urban parks. And there's more. At the helm is Professor Rosie McKechan, the study director and a behavioural scientist. She joins us today from Bradford. Rosie, welcome.
Thank you very much for having me.
Now, just to clear our throats, when we invited you to join the We Society podcast, well, this is a strange podcast title, what was your thought?
I was delighted, actually, to be asked, because I think it's really important to sort of spread the message and the word about what we're doing in Bradford to a wider audience. So I was I was delighted that we were on the radar. I think that we're not a typical research programme here in Born in Bradford. So I'm really delighted to be able to get a chance to talk about the sort of unique features of what we do, and particularly, try to get across our passion for changing things, for improving things, for making a real difference. So that's what I was pleased to hopefully get a chance to get across in this discussion today.
Well, let's get on with it. I mean, I have to say, doing the background reading, I was more and more impressed with what you've been doing. Why not start and give us some kind of headline statistics, some headline facts and figures to really whet people's appetite?
Okay, so Bradford is one of the largest districts in the UK. We have a population of over 550,000. We are a vibrant, multi-ethnic, diverse city. It is an amazing place to live and work, and I have lived and worked in Bradford for many years. However, with living in an urban area, we have some challenges in Bradford. So Bradford is one of the most deprived areas within the UK. And we know that with that deprivation comes real health inequalities. And
now just put some facts and figures behind that kind of big word deprivation. I mean, what are the metrics? I mean, people are shorter, people are more obese, are hungrier, people are more likely to get disease, overcrowded housing. I mean, what are the kind of metrics which allows you to make that statement?
The way we measure deprivation is at an area-based level, and it covers a whole range of different factors such as income, employment prospects, education and health. We are across the UK, we have these standardised metrics that allow us to compare levels of deprivation across different areas. And in Bradford, a third of the population live in the most deprived decile, according to England and Wales. So we are overrepresented in terms of people who are living in very difficult circumstances. Now, the impact...
That's to say overcrowded housing, or housing that's damp, housing that's poorly heated.
Yeah, so that is one of the sort of dimensions that contributes to sort of this general overall factor of how hard families have it. Now, the key thing is that when you're trying to predict health outcomes at a population level, you look at this measure of deprivation. It's called the Index of Multiple Deprivation. So it takes a number of different domains.
Right.
And you find that that is predictive of almost every health outcome, whether that is chronic or whether that is acute, that you can identify. So poverty, deprivation is one of the biggest, pernicious, wicked problems that we have to deal with as a society. And it's very difficult to change. So with these higher levels of deprivation comes higher levels of health inequality. So, yeah, it's a very tricky, we call it a wicked problem, because it is one of these problems that people have been trying to address for a long time, and it's very difficult to do.
And what you're saying, I mean, we're going to explore this in the minutes ahead, but these levels of deprivation, this word poverty, it's thrown around so much. It might be helpful, I think, to really drive home what that means. It means children not eating properly during the course of a day, being hungry during lessons. It means having to conserve electricity and heating because you daren't rack up the bills. I mean, just give us some sense of, when you use that word, what sits behind it in terms of lived experience.
You're absolutely right. It's families who are living in very difficult circumstances, families who may not be able to give their children three meals a day, families who may be living in areas where it's cheaper to buy, you know, chicken and chips to feed your family than it is to buy healthy, nutritious food. It's about employment prospects. It's about access to education. So there's the thermal comfort, the heating during winter is another key thing. So it's a whole load of different issues which are layered upon each other to kind of create this like triple whammy of problems that families have to address. And I think the other thing to say is that there's also overlying all these sort of issues to do with income insecurity and food insecurity, that there is a lot of spatial injustice as well. And this is common for most urban cities, is that you will find the places where we have families that are in most financial insecurity, those will be the parts of the city where you have the highest levels of pollution, the least access to green spaces, fast food swamps and healthy food deserts, a lack of public transport, education settings that are perhaps not doing as well as they could. So it's a really entrenched issue. But I do want to say that, you know, this is a complicated and nuanced area, and it's very easy for us to sit in our offices and talk about poverty and how difficult things are for families. But we also have to recognise that Bradford is a place where, yes, we have high levels of deprivation, but we have a very rich cultural and social identity and very rich community and interconnections as well. So I always think it's very important to be balanced about how we talk about families who are living in these areas and how we talk about families who are taking part in our research project as well.
Now, born in Bradford, it's 13,500 children. Are those from all socioeconomic backgrounds? So you've got some kind of control group. Is it just all the children that were born in the hospital in that four-year period? Give us some sense of your findings.
Okay, so we aim to be a population cohort. So a birth cohort is when we follow the health and well-being of families from when babies are born right up until hopefully they have babies themselves. We wanted to be inclusive, right? So one of the problems that we have in research and in longitudinal research is that often the types of families that will recruit themselves or select themselves into a study may not be representative of the wider population, particularly low-income groups and some ethnic minority groups. They are less likely to take part in research. Now, Bradford being a deprived and multicultural city, this was something we were really aware of. So what we did was we just set up our stall at the maternity unit in the main city hospital. So they have 6,000 births a year in Bradford, one of the biggest birth rates in the UK.
That's the Royal Infirmary, yes?
Right, yeah, the Bradford Royal Infirmary. That's where our offices are based. And we opened the study to all women who were booked to give birth or receive care from the hospital. And crucially, I think for us, because we are an NHS-based research study, this was a project that at inception was done in partnership with our local clinicians. So in a sense, it was just the normal thing to do in Bradford. If you're having a baby, you sign up to the Born in Bradford study. We recruited almost 80% of women who came through the BRI maternity unit doors to the project. So that's unheard of, unparalleled. We are...
Just repeat that. That's just that's a stunning number.
Yes, it's great. It's a movement, a social movement. You know, that I think that is, you know, we are not a dusty shelf research project here. This is all about how we can improve the services within our city and how we can make things better for families. So we ended up with a cohort that was representative of Bradford at that time. Now, the interesting thing about Bradford is that according to the most recent census, just over a quarter of our population are of Pakistani origin heritage. If you look at younger age groups in the city, the proportion of Pakistani heritage families increases. So actually, 50% of the mums in our cohort are of Pakistani heritage. And that is reflective of what's happening in inner city Bradford. And again, that makes us a very, very unique study. Also means, you know, we recruit in a multitude of languages. You know, we have our community fieldwork team who can speak, you know, 50 languages to try and make the cohort as inclusive as possible.
And so what you're doing is you're charting these babies, linking their nutrition to their growth, to how they're developing psychologically, emotionally, physically, what learning difficulties they're encountering, and I mean, all of those dimensions, yes?
Everything, yeah. And one of the ways in which we do that, so as you can imagine, a study of this size, if you want to go and speak to every mother and every child every year, that's going to take a lot of time. So what we did at the very start of the project is that we asked families to consent to routine data linkage. And we were one of the first sort of studies trying to trailblaze this type of approach to data collection. And what that means is that we can follow through, you know, routine healthcare use from things like visiting your hospital or visiting your GP, track the health of families. But we can also, as children go into education settings, we can start to look at the impacts of, you know, various factors on academic attainment as well. So that's been really helpful to us to sort of allow us to give a really well-rounded view of not just the health aspects of what our families are going through, but also as we're sort of charting this journey through formal education. Now, that's not to say we have done loads of stuff with families as well, you know, filling out surveys. One of our projects that we're doing at the minute is looking at indoor air quality in families' homes. We're going in, we're putting sensors in people's homes where we are measuring things like damp and mould and overcrowding and all sorts. We've had kids carrying around pollution monitors on their backs. We've had kids filling in, taking pictures of what they eat for their school lunches. You know, so there's a whole range of different ways in which we've been collecting data from our families.
And one of the early kind of practical interventions that flowed from this was the establishment of the Bradford Clean Air Zone, which in particular was restricting the, there's quite a lot of the kind of high density roads were near the kinds of housing that you're talking about by insisting that there were higher levels of exhaust emission. You've managed to clean to a degree the air that a lot of these families are breathing. I mean, that's an extraordinary achievement, isn't it?
Well, I mean, but so important. And I think what we are able to show with our research in Barnard Bradford is how you can actually use evidence to inform policy and inform change.
We call that social science, by the way.
so we call it in our land a city collaboratory approach. So this is what we've set up in Bradford. Because actually I find that often, you know, we do a lot of research, don't we? And often a lot of research doesn't make its way into real change. It can take a long time as well. And that can be a frustration for policymakers who need the answers to their questions now. But just to go back on that sort of example of pollution, our very earliest findings in Bourne and Bradford were looking at birth weight. And what we were able to show is that the levels of pollution around the home addresses where the mums lived was directly related to the probability of a baby having a low birth weight and a reduced head circumference. And that was very, very powerful evidence for the policymakers in the city. And then as our children grew, we were able to show, okay, impacts on blood pressure in children, impacts on brain development, and even looking at the DNA. So we're able to give policymakers a very strong drive for action. But of course, what we also need to do is to make sure that we can get the investment down and take advantage of the policies that are out within the sort of national level to maximise the impact. So in sort of parallel with us doing a lot of work on the importance of pollution, there was a drive from the government to implement clean air zones, which were to tackle illegal levels of pollution. And we were able to work really closely with the city to design the scope of the clean air zone, try to make it as ambitious as possible for population health. But crucially, we're evaluating the impact of it as well. So, you know, we will, the clean air zone has been in place for over a year now. And we are through tracking the health of our cohorts and the health of the population in the city, we will be able to actually explore, well, okay, does it improve respiratory health? Does it lead to reduced health service use? And does it crucially impact on health inequalities in the city?
Just a quick break in the conversation to tell you about the Academy of Social Sciences, the organisation behind the We Society podcast. I'm Will Hutton, the president of the Academy of Social Sciences, the national body for social science academics, practitioners and learned societies. From listening to the podcast, you'll hear that social scientists are at the forefront of tackling the most pressing issues of our time. And in this podcast, we bring you some of their best ideas to shape the way we live. You can find out more about the Academy of Social Sciences' work, support us, or read up on our fellows by going to the website acss.org.uk. That's acss.org.uk. Now, back to the conversation. Now, another area that you've been kind of strong on is this, and you alluded to it in your early remarks, is green spaces, and that it falls out that people who live in these particularly deprived areas have less access to green spaces. And you've been working on that, creating more open parks, more areas of recreation. I mean, I think that's, again, a dimension which, you should foreground a bit.
Yeah, again, for me, it is a really interesting area and one that resonates with myself as well. Like, I love going walking in nature. It relaxes me. And I started to think, well, you know, when you are living in an urban area, there are places of where people can't get access to this, what we just take for granted often. So we started to look at the impact of having access to parks and green spaces, you know, nice places to be, on mental health. And what we found during pregnancy is that mums who were living in the greenest parts of the city that had most access to green space were 20% less likely to report symptoms of severe depression.
That's interesting. You kind of know that, but it's wonderful to have it proved like that. It's great. It's wonderful.
Well, you're spot on there, right? A lot of things that we do, if you speak to somebody in the street about it, they're like, well, yeah, obviously, common sense, of course,
yeah, exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
But if you're a local authority who has a limited budget or, you know, a government with trying to decide where you need to make investment, it's those people that need the evidence. And actually, as a direct result of the evidence that we'd been collating on green space within our communities, we were able to work with partners to bring investment into the city. So this was a big project for Bradford called Better Start Bradford. It was a £50 million investment from the Big Lottery Community Fund to improve outcomes for pregnant women and young children aged 0 to 3. And we were able to sort of knock on the door and say, okay, yeah, you haven't thought about green space and the environment, but did you know that this is a massive issue? And because of that, we sort of changed the type of investment that they were going to give us. And as a result, you know, 40 green spaces in inner city Bradford have been refurbished to make them nicer places for families.
40?
So that's 40, yeah, 40 little places, you know, in three of the most deprived wards of Bradford. Have been improved. We've been working with communities to think about, right, how can we get people out into these spaces more? So that's why we need the evidence. That's why it is so important.
You remind me a bit. I mean, you'll smile at this, but in the 1860s and 1870s, that's, you know, 175 years ago, there were two very considerable figures. One was called John Ruskin, and the other was William Morris. And they were early. I mean, John Ruskin kind of leant right, you know, and William Morris, of course, was the great advocate of guild socialism, and his great kind of designs are now familiar. But both men were absolutely passionate about the need to get beauty into working class lives, and how important it was that the artifacts that working class people had at their disposal, the clothes they wore, the buildings they lived in, and above all, access to nature, was fundamental to their well-being. And so you're kind of rediscovering and proving what they thought all those years ago.
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, we had our sort of very own philanthropist called Sir Titus Salt in Bradford.
You did. And he was into all of this, wasn't he? Yes.
Yeah. So just literally sort of 10 minutes down the road from where I'm sitting now is the beautiful village of Saltaire, which was a village that was built for the workers of these big textile mills, and really gorgeous examples of public open space that were built for the communities in Bradford. And actually, in Bradford has got a number of like amazing Victorian parks and spaces for the use of residents.
And wonderful cemeteries, actually.
Yeah.
Huge kind of some of the most extraordinary tombs and mausoleums I've ever seen in my life are in Bradford.
Yeah, I feel like we're doing a good sales pitch for Bradford. It's a beautiful place. But I think what's also important to understand, and I think this is where the sort of the mixed methods approach that we have in Barn and Bradford to sort of embedding the quantitative evidence with also the more qualitative and experiential, is that when we go out, we've done loads of sort of work out in parks, talking to communities, right? Do you use them or not? And there's a whole, you can have these beautiful spaces, but they're not going to be used if people don't feel safe, if there's fly tipping or littering, or kids are worried about standing on broken glass. And so it's this complex interacting system, isn't it, that we need to address. So provision on its own is not enough. I always say it's not quantity, it's quality that's important here.
The other thing that's interesting, and I don't know whether you stray into this, is that there's increasing evidence in the States that people's life chances, if they come from socially deprived areas, are best enhanced if they can become part of the social networks of those on kind of middle incomes or above, that the more kind of inter-ethnic, inter-class, inter-gender mingling you get, and people kind of really building up kind of friendship relationships, again, the better it is for your internal psychological health, but also, you know, your life path.
Yeah, I think that's really important. And I think sometimes what happens when you have these big urban areas is that you have sort of spirals of disinvestment that happen in particular places where a lot of the sort of problems become entrenched spatially in one area, and it can be quite difficult to sort of knock out of those silos. I think also, you know, Bradford is a very multi-ethnic city, but we are sort of have patches of places where, you know, maybe it's predominantly white, or it is predominantly South Asian origin. So there are also sort of areas where we're not mixing as much. So it's quite an interesting thing to consider.
Where do you go next? You've got green spaces as one, 40 extra green spaces. You've got the Bradford Clean Air Zone. I was thinking this kind of material does have to be sold to people. I mean, I think green parks is obviously sellable, but clean air, there's always some kind of resistance to it. Although, again, it's obvious.
Well, it's so interesting because, so, you know, we're charting the implementation of this clean air zone in Bradford. And what I can tell you from our research that we've done with communities is actually quite a high level of acceptability for the clean air zone. 2/3 are supportive of it. But what you get is these very loud, divisive voices that end up taking the discourse in the media and almost setting the tone of the narrative. So actually, what we're getting then is whole policies almost being derailed or dominated by a vocal few. And that is where I see that our role as evidence makers is to objectively state the evidence, both about people's attitudes and the health impacts, so that policymakers have a bit of confidence to push back on perhaps some of these scare theories or conspiracy theories about, you know, what we're all trying to do when we're trying to reduce pollution in our cities. So it's very, it's a fascinating area.
You're talking to us from your office in the Royal Infirmary, yes?
I'm at my home office today.
You're at your home office, but that yes. Essentially you're rooted in the infirmary. And who's paying for all this work that you're doing?
So we get all of our funding from Research Council funding, so from UKRI funders or funders such as the National Institute for Health Research. So what that means is that we, yeah, competitively apply for funding, but are very successful, which I think means that the funders in the UK are recognising that what we are doing is really important and very novel. I'm always on the lookout for the sort of next great opportunity for us to focus our research on.
And next year, some of the people who were kind of born when the study began in 2007 will be 18. So are you going to, does it stop then, or are you going to carry on following them into later life?
Yeah, so we are carrying on. So we were really delighted to get some great funding from Wellcome to allow us to carry on into this sort of period into young adulthood. This project is called Age of Wonder. It's so really looking at that, what a turbulent time to navigate adolescence and into young adulthood, you know, coming on the back of the pandemic, the cost of living crisis. And what we're doing is we're sort of expanding our BIB cohort. Our aim is to get every young person in Bradford involved in this Age of Wonder study. So this will be involved.
It's a great title for a study. I like it.
Yeah. So we'll be following up, you know, that period into young adulthood is going to be so important. And it comes as Bradford enters its City of Culture year in 2025 as well. So is what, you know, we've talked about a lot of the hardships and the detrimental impacts on health, but actually what we're going to be looking at in Bradford is how does this increase in community cohesion and investment in arts and culture impact on our young people? So watch this space, because there's a lot more to come from us.
I'm very struck actually, you know, because it was Seaboam Rowntree at the turn of the last century who did a great survey in York, and you mentioned Salter and the great, it was Titus Oates, wasn't it?
Titus Salt,
I beg your pardon. Titus Salt. I mean, someone like Bradford and York, mentioned the University of York. So, of course, you have Professor Kate Pickett, who we've interviewed actually on this podcast, and her great work on income inequality and how it's associated with so many kind of negative social and health outcomes. I guess you key into that as well?
Absolutely, yeah. So we work really closely with Kate and Maria Bryant and actually sort of universities across our patch. But I think health inequalities and the dimension and the sort of input that Kate has championed in BIB is, I would say, at the core of everything that we're doing. It's about justice and fairness and a healthier and happier future for families.
We're reaching the end now. I mean, what are the kind of one, two or three, what are your kind of next targets? What would good look like in the next two or three years that if you could really, what's your dream?
Okay, I mean, so
is it nutrition, and where does it go next?
Okay, so for me, it's all about the built environment. It's about actually understanding how the complexity of the places and the cities in which we live can be used as tools for population health. So we have a new project just about to start called HUP North, Healthy Urban Places North, which is all about trying to better evidence the impact of changes to our places. So I'm very excited about that. I think the Age of Wonder project for us and the work with adolescents is very exciting. It is not only going to enable us to collect really important data.
Is there a takeaway from that, like, analogous to building 40 green spaces. Is there a takeaway from that that's emerging?
Actually, what we want to do in Age of Wonder is inspire the next generation of scientists and researchers in Bradford. I'm hoping that amongst this cadre of people that we're working with now will be the next director of the Born in Bradford programme.
Because you've been doing it for how long now?
Oh, goodness me. 2012 I started, and also have a unique perspective because I do actually have two children myself who are part of the Born in Bradford cohort. So I had that experience before I took the job. I was told that it wasn't an essential qualification. But I think for us, the outcome and the output is massively important. But for us, this is the process. This is the process for us of working with our communities and working with our stakeholders and building capacity in Bradford, and I'm just sort of slowly over time improving the life, you know, what's happening in the city and the life chances. And I think, yeah, that process to me is the most important thing.
So the built environment, Age of Wonder.
Adolescent mental health, hugely important. And I think that the final key area for us is about, right, how can we spread out this model of data infrastructure and linkage so that we can get other areas? We want other Born in Bradfords across the UK to be working in the types of ways that we do.
Well, Rosie McEachin, thank you so much for a fascinating, fascinating 40 minutes. I think you've driven home the point that deprivation is very hard to escape from, is self-reinforcing, and has public health consequences. And if we want to relieve the pressure on our health services, then paradoxically, building 40 green spaces, producing polluted air, is closely associated with high levels of satisfaction, emotional satisfaction, and physical kind of physical strength and better lives. I mean, we all want to live lives we have reason to value, and to do it in a place with access to open space and beauty is a thing. I have to say, in Born in Bradford, you are trailblazing, and let's hope that we can roll this out into other parts of the country and really establish a kind of social science database that will really help policymakers direct their investment to get the best paybacks in terms of people's improved well-being and health. Godspeed and congratulations, and keep up the good work, Rosie. Thank you very much for coming on the We Society podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for listening. The We Society is brought to you by the Academy of Social Sciences, who can be found at acss.org.uk. I'm Will Hutton. The producer is Emily Finch, and it's a Whistledown production. If you haven't already, please subscribe to the podcast, leave a comment, share with your colleagues and friends. Have any suggestions for guests, feedback for the programme? Email us on wesociety@acss.org.uk. And above all, thank you for listening.